Yeah, from the animal realm up. Well, I think this whole business of the six realms is pretty difficult, actually, and I'm not sure how I take it. See, traditionally speaking, the animals don't perform karmas. They're not self-conscious, so they don't act skillfully or unskillfully. So the question arises, if you're in the animal realm, how do you get out of it? I don't really know what the answer to that is. There's different ways you could approach it. One thing you could say is that you could say that the animal realm is purely a resultant realm. So in other words, you move into the animal realm because you've performed certain unskillful actions, and once, if you like, you've exhausted those results, you'll go back to the human realm. I'm not sure if that's true, but that's one way that you could talk. Another way that you could talk about it is to say that perhaps the best hope that an animal has got is contact with human beings. Through their contact with human beings, they may actually, you know, some sort of self-consciousness rubs off. For example, in the case of dogs, you know, dogs do quite well. But I personally feel that this animal thing, I think it's a bit, I don't think it really fits together that well. That's my own view. But I think in traditional terms, I think the way that they would more tend to see it is a realm like the animal realm is simply a realm where you go to burn up the results of unskillful action, and then somehow when you've done that, you move into another realm. I mean, the thing is, I suppose you're dealing with a model of life and cosmology, you know, that doesn't, for example, take into account Darwinian evolution. So, I mean, this is one of my big questions about karma. How does it fit, you know, with the notion of evolution? And I certainly don't have a short answer for you on that, but I think it's an interesting question.
Can you just clarify the difference between the animals and the
creatures? Well, I think the animal realm is kind of a fairly crude realm, but it's not all that painful necessarily. It's just a realm of crude appetite, reproduction, you know, eating food and expelling food, etc. The praetor realm, in this model, the praetors are said to have these, or some of them at least, have these really, really big stomachs and these really tiny, tiny mouths. And I think everything that they eat changes to excrement. And everything that they drink changes to liquid fire. So there's this idea that they can never be satisfied. They've got this hunger, they've got this need, they've got this desire, but it can never be satisfied. And this is their suffering. And I think maybe you can see analogues, you know, in the human realm of praetor-like beings, you know, beings who somehow, however much they crave, however much they stick in, they're never satisfied. Well, doesn't that seem like a difference? Well, one of them seems to me just a realm of crude, you know, consuming, and another realm is also consuming, but with a much more kind of painful angle to it. I mean, basically, the praetors is a more painful, unpleasant realm, because, I mean, an animal, when it eats, is generally satisfied. Yeah? It just eats, it's okay, it reproduces, it's okay. But the praetor can never be satisfied. That it's constantly got this craving there. And I think, well, perhaps to think about the difference, if you think about some human analogues, you could think about, well, you get some people who are just very into their crude appetites. They like eating, you know, they like kind of, I don't know, all sorts of sports maybe, I don't know. They're just very physically oriented. And when they eat, they're satisfied. But you get other people who, whatever they do, they're just left with this sort of, this hunger, this thirst, this desire. However much they've got, it's never enough. They're never satisfied by it. So I think, you know, I think there is a difference there. Has that got somewhere? Yeah. It's traditionally taken completely literally, yeah. But whether we can take it literally ourselves or whether we're willing to is a different question. On the whole, I probably don't myself take it literally, basically because it seems to raise too many conceptual problems for me. But traditionally it would be taken literally, yeah. Who's in it? There are lots of gods. There's lots of them. It's inhabited by people who've perhaps lived positive lives, but without perhaps any necessarily particular spiritual practice or aspiration. And sort of in more psychological terms, it might be seen as people, well, nice people, really, nice people. People who are perhaps just naturally quite ethical, naturally perhaps quite generous and friendly and kind, but they're not striving to fully overcome and transcend all their unskillful motivations. There are actually as well some God realms where there are spiritual practitioners as well. According to Buddhism, there are some particular realms where there are beings practicing the Dharma, practicing Buddhism, and moving on to gain enlightenment. And this led to kind of a later idea called the Pure Land, where these beings would be reborn and gain full enlightenment.
How much, or how important is it for a Buddhist to actually take everything?
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, yeah.
When it comes down to the business of picking and choosing.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, well, that's two questions there, I think. How much do you have to believe? I think that's one of the things. I think I would say that the thing that you do have to believe is that you can change for the better. If you don't believe that, then in a way, the whole of Buddhism is a complete waste of time. Whether you believe that when you die, you'll be reborn, I don't think it's essential to believe that, but I think it's important to try and take it quite seriously and not just dismiss it. Because I think that we have a tendency to think that the worldview that we inherit is the correct worldview, and if we come across another worldview that conflicts with it, it must therefore be wrong. So we're generally brought up to believe that, you know, we're all the product of biology, and when our body dies, that will be, you know, the end of the story. And maybe that's true, I don't know. But maybe it's not true. You know, maybe after death there will be some form of continued existence. And so from a personal point of view, I try to keep an open mind to that, although I have to be quite honest and I'm sort of realizing this more and more how difficult it is for me to think in those terms because of the worldview that I've inherited. Yeah, but I would say that you know we've really got to believe that we can change, you know, and as I say, change for the better. You know, whether we believe in enlightenment in the sense of that one day we're going to be completely liberated from all ill will or all ignorance. Again, I don't think we necessarily need to believe that for the basis of practice. But I think we do need to have some sort of confidence in some of the practices of Buddhism, like meditation, like practicing ethical precepts. We have to believe that those are actually going to lead to positive changes. Yeah. I think you'll get a different answer from different people. I mean, you might get someone who'd say, you've got to believe all of these things. Or you might get somebody else who might say, well, I don't believe any of it. I'm trying to take a sort of middle ground these days and trying to take the tradition as seriously as possible, but without necessarily thinking that it's to be taken literally or, you know, every detail is correct. That's something of that, yeah. I mean, obviously that's to some extent flawed because the personal experience depends on, well, one's own degree of spiritual maturity. And in the absence of one's own spiritual experience, I guess I have to rely on my own spiritual teachers and to quite a large extent on the tradition. You know, I do look at the tradition quite deeply and seriously.